celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves. Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year. And while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Faster Utah is proactive about school safety. For more information, fasterutah.org.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. And if this winter that includes ice fishing, you're in luck. Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment. When it's cold outside, that's the time to come in and see what's hot inside. At Sportsman's Warehouse, Utah born, Utah proud, serving you since 1986, Sportsman's Warehouse, the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors.
Play safe on the water. In Utah, youth 12 to 17 must pass an approved safety class prior to operating personal watercraft on Utah waters. Classes are offered statewide. Register now or get more information by calling 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Camping in the mountains, fishing in a stream. The great outdoors is where you want to be.
Grover joins us in the garden once again with Utah's Best Gardening. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes with us.
Well, thank you for having me. Gardening is near and dear to my heart, and I think it's near and dear to most people's hearts, even when they don't know it. Most people are happier when they're gardening.
You're not kidding. I am one of those guys myself, and we're in November already. We're seeing lots of moisture show up on some of our doorsteps. And it's certainly time to start putting everything to bed if you haven't done it already.
Yeah, and it's actually kind of annoying because we've had this warmish fall, and it's nice having the warmish fall, but my daytime job is gardening, and usually I'll mow mid-October, and then I'll get one in. It's going to be somewhere between mid-November, before Thanksgiving. Yeah, I've had to mow every week, and we're finally down to where our normal temperatures are with this low that's coming through, but not just that it's been cold, but we've had a lot of water, which is really good. But as far as the lawn goes, I'm having to extend my lawn care maintenance beyond what I normally want to. I don't have a choice. I don't want a long, gangly lawn through the winter because then I'm more likely to pick up an errant fungus somewhere.
You got to time it, though. You can't do it right after a rainstorm or anything like that. You got to dry it out just enough to be able to get that cut back.
Not right after a rainstorm? I mean, I've been doing it wrong all these years.
That's not going to matter anything, will it?
Yeah. I'm going to tell you the story. When I worked at the Atlanta Temple down in Georgia, you know, it's Georgia, we get a lot of rain. You have to do it. You have to when you can. And I was out there, and we didn't have the weather apps on the phone and everything like that, so you can instantly check what the next hour is supposed to be like. So I was out there mowing the lawn, thought I was going to be okay, and I had just a relatively small amount, but it was a big lawn, so it still was more than a lot of homeowner lawns did. And I just got hit with a downpour. And I'm out there in the middle of a job on a very visible hill for anybody that's on that road. And I've got part of this lawn mowed. And I looked at it and thought, oh, I'm going to finish the job. I'm already here. It's not going to look good if I leave it. I don't know when the storm's going to end. I don't know if we'll be able to finish today or tomorrow or whatever. So I finished it. And I literally had standing water that my mower blade was swirling through, and I got done, packed up my mower, and my boss didn't realize what I had done, and she could not tell from the look of the lawn, but as soon as she found out I'd been mowing in the rain, I got chewed out, totally slaughtered. But again, what do you do sometimes, right? You can plan ahead, and you can plan ahead, and you can plan ahead, and whether you believe in God or whether you believe in the absolute scientific and all the numbers and everything, it still just happens. And so, yeah, I recommend trying to avoid that, but you can make it work sometimes.
It's not every day, the rain. Just got to time those right little windows and things will work out a lot better for you. I know a lot of people are still wondering, I haven't got my fertilizer on for the fall. Is it too late now?
You know, this year, I don't know if I want to commit on that. General rule of thumb is you really should be done by the 1st of October. I got it done more towards the end of October. It just, timing on everything was really bad. So I picked a day before a storm, laid it down, and it was right because it was still growing for 2 weeks. So I did okay. You've really got to look at your lawn. Sure, that it is colder than it ought to be. certainly I wouldn't put on the full amount that maybe your four-step program tells you to do. Of course, I usually don't like putting that much on this late in the year because, honestly, I think a lot of them recommend too much. But, yeah, if you haven't got it, I think we've got a couple more weeks of very slow growth. What happens is that nitrogen will get absorbed into the plant, which needs growth. You're not going to absorb it unless the plant's got some active growth. And it will store it in the plant over the winter. Now, I don't actually know if that happens with any plant other than turf grass. I'm sure it probably does, but I'm not sure it's all of them. But, yeah, I would say go ahead, fertilize this weekend, and just get it done quick. I think you will get some benefit, probably not as much as you would hope, but I think you'll still get some benefit. That's a tough question.
Outside of the lawn, is it too late to plant garlic and those other bulbs?
We're getting a bit late for the garlic. Throw it in. Now, as far as your ornamental bulbs, you've got until the ground freezes in Utah. When I lived in Georgia, I actually planted right up until New Year's, just brilliant displays. So we get a little bit uptight about when we can plant. In Utah, for that, the real thing is going to be, does the ground freeze before you get your bulbs in? If your ground doesn't freeze before you get your bulbs in, chances are you can do it. The last couple of years, we've had freezes like around February before you get a good solid freeze, which is normally scary for somebody that's been doing this for so many years. But certainly, as long as the ground's not frozen, you could plant through December, probably into early January without any question. I've got such a full perennial garden, I'm not sure where I'm going to put my bulbs where they won't get choked out. But I've got to get them planted or my wife will kill me.
It's not too late to get things done. I know we've been wrapping up all of our hoses and trying to put things to bed in our garden. If there's any weeds remaining, see if you can clear those out, get those taken care of. A lot of people, if they can, they try to till their ground. Is that a good idea this late in the season? Or is it better just to wait till spring?
I would not do it this late in the season, especially with the rain we've been getting. You don't want dry, dry, dry soil, but you also don't want sapping wet or you're going to have issues. I'm also going to say, I'm firmly in the don't till if you can avoid it camp. The science is pretty clear. The repeated tilling does tend to do more damage to your soil. Now, sometimes it's so hard and so compacted and so crappy, you've got to run a tiller through it. And usually then you have to run it through like 5 or 10 times. But if you can avoid it, if you can dig a hole without having to fight with a trowel. Up at my job, we have a very thick soil. It's clay. It got compacted because the lawn used to be there. We took out the lawn to cut down some water, and we put in some water-hardy plants, and that's great. And the boss, I didn't have to make this decision. I wasn't the boss then. The boss said we were going to till, and I think it was the right decision because I just don't think we could have actually planted it. It was so thick and heavy. But if that had been like an annual bed, I would have done my best not to till it again, and I think we could have. And so if you can avoid it, don't till. If you must till, unless we get a good dry spell between now and Thanksgiving, which ain't going to happen, folks. Not a good enough dry spell. Because of the temperatures, the soil is just not going to dry up that much. You're going to wait till spring.
One less thing to do this fall, then.
Yeah, and the tilling in the fall is really a weed control issue. That's why you till in the fall. You're not doing it for the benefit of planting and loosening the soil for the plants because it's going to compact over the winter, especially if we get a good snow cover, which hopefully we'll get. Because after this last year, we need everything we can get. But the tilling this time of year is purely about weed control. And so you can find another way to control your weeds if you have to.
What about plant removal of some of the plants? I know a lot of people, especially tomatoes, they'll remove the vines entirely just to prevent potential disease proliferation until the next year. A lot of times they'll burn them or remove them entirely.
That's fine. Your issues are going to be, what do you do to the soil? When it's wet, you're much more likely to compact it, and compacting it just isn't good for soil. The other issues you run into on this time of year is it frozen? Well, it's not frozen yet, so that's fine. Everything's going to be wet this time of year. Even if you think you've got a good couple dry days, you're going to go out there and things aren't going to be dried out fully, so it's going to be wet. That's annoying, but it's not a life killer or anything. One of the questions that should be asked is spraying Roundup. I have got a patch that I always get cheatgrass in, and it is a gorgeous, lush, beautiful green this year. I don't want cheatgrass looking that great. Generally, they say you need to spray Roundup when it's above 60, but the real key is the plant actively growing. And so this fall, hopefully this weekend, I was going to do it last weekend, but I just didn't have enough left after working. But this weekend, I'm going to go out, and it's going to be below 60, and I'm going to spray it with Roundup, and I'm going to see what happens. And it may kill it, and it may not. I may waste a load of Roundup, but I will know how that plant reacts under that, and I'll have a better idea of what I can do in the future.
We'll wait and see how it turned out.
Yeah, talk to me in 6 months.
Sounds good. As far as putting everything else to bed, if they haven't done so already, it's time to blow out those lines, the sprinkler systems, make sure we get the water cleared out of them so they don't break the lines this winter.
Yeah, and now that's going to depend a lot on what your system is designed like. My system's designed like a drunk did it, and apparently he did use enough drains that I haven't blown out my system. Of course, I'm on a small property, and my lines seem to be just deep enough. At work, my predecessor was there for 5.5 years, and he never blew out the lines, and he never had a freeze break. At least he doesn't claim to have a freeze break. I turned off my water. We've got provisions. We can drain it. It's on a slope, so I can rely on a lot of gravity, and I can tell you right now there was hardly anything that dribbled out of that system. So I don't know what everything looks like underground, but there seems to be some leakage out of that system or something. I worry about this because blowing out your system costs a lot of money, and most homeowner systems have an automatic drain that once it's depressurized in the lateral lines that go to your zones, those will drain. And honestly, if your main lines are not far enough underground, then there's going to be an issue anyway. Most smallish properties up to maybe 3/4 to maybe an acre, if they're designed well, actually should drain fairly decently without you having to pressurize them. Now, as I say that, somebody's going to come back in the spring. You told me not to do this. I'm like, no, I didn't say that. It's most systems, and you've got to make that decision based on what you've been doing. If you've got a system that's really shallow, if you've got a system that you had problems with, please, please blow it out. Again, if it's decently designed, honestly, it should be deep enough that you don't have an issue. And I say should. You've got to make that determination yourself.
Swamp coolers, they need to be put to bed if they haven't been done so. Drain that water out of there. That could be a problem in the winter or spring.
Yeah, the swamp cooler can potentially freeze. Now, as I say that, most swamp coolers have something that's rounded on the sides, and so it slopes as it goes up. And that will actually do a pretty good job of forcing the water to raise up. It won't break the casing on it. But you've got the points where you've got the attachments for your pump, and actually your drain could actually freeze up. That's one of the points that could have the most damage. So draining that is really advisable. If you have a thin layer of water, you'll be okay. By thin, I mean maybe less than 1/4 inch. I did mine weeks ago, so mine air dried, and I don't have a problem. We've got one in a window in this place, and so I've got a piece of 3 or 4 inch foam that I've got cut, and I actually cut a second one. So I've got 2 foam plugs in there, and then I've wrapped the outside in a tarp this year so I'm going to have very, very little air coming through that. There will be some cold transfer, but honestly, through the window it's in, it's going to come through the window more than the actual swamp cooler. So mine's really in nice shape this year. My wife was worried about it. I don't like putting that much work into things, but she's probably right. Well, the great thing about cutting the foam is once you cut the foam, there are three things you have to do. Take it out, store it through the summer, and put it back in fall. So the foam plugs are a really good idea. They sell pillows for it. I've never tried one of those, but over the years I have used all sorts of things, including styrofoam cut from, this shows my age, by the way, styrofoam cut from the casings that come around big rolls of videotape. I've used that to winterize a swamp cooler before. Does anybody even know what videotape is?
Yeah, I do.
I used to work at a company where we copied videos. Not illegal, but companies would contract us for 1,000 videos, 10,000 videos. And we have these big, big rolls of video tape that would be like, I think about 18 inches wide. And these were, of course, packed in things so they don't get damaged, because they end up being really heavy when you have that much videotape. And videotape's kind of delicate. And I used the packaging that for all sorts of things because it was just garbage and I could use it. So I like it when people look at, oh, I've got access to this. It's cheap, it's easy, recyclable, or at least I'm going to make it recyclable. This is what I'm going to use. I think that that is a good way to do things.
I agree. Yeah, make sure you have all that buttoned up. You don't have that cold air dropping into your house. Makes a difference. It really does.
Yeah. The other thing that we've got to worry about this time of year, and again, since we've had this warm fall up till now and it could get warm again, talk about spiders and insects and other creepy crawlies coming into the house. Those are a very big annoyance issue. Now, a lot of these bugs really don't do much to us. They're not that dangerous. Now, everyone's always worried about spiders, and I get it. I do need to mention that there is only one spider with medical significance that has any permanent presence in Utah. And you notice how I carefully said that. Spiders hitchhike, and so people are just terrified of brown recluses in Utah. And I've got a cadre of people who will swear up and down that brown recluses are here and there and everywhere. There's a massive invasion up at Hill Air Force Base, supposedly. I don't believe it, but people swear it is. They know, by golly, that it's brown recluses. And it's funny because a week after somebody started piping off with that, less than a week, in fact, one of the state entomologists came out and he had his three most notorious spiders in Utah. And brown recluse was not on the list of being in Utah. And if a guy that studies insects and spiders for a living can't seem to find any, don't tell me that you've got one unless you've got proof. And that means a good photo. And you cannot tell one spider bite effectively from another most of the time. The skin is way too flexible, and spiders' bites all look the same.
What are the top three that you remember? Or do you remember all three of them?
He talked about hobo spiders, which, again, they're not toxic. Talked about, of course, black widows. And I forget the third one he talked about. But again, when I say medically significant, most spiders, not all, most spiders have a toxic bite. They're going to give you a bit of a burn or an itch or something. By medically significant, are these spiders going to actually make me sick enough that I need medical care of any sort or go to the hospital? And the only one that's, for a normal, healthy person, that's an issue in Utah is the black widow, the western black widow. There are potentially one or two other spiders that have hitched rides somewhere that maybe you have to worry about. But as far as established breeding populations, that's the only one we've got confirmed in Utah. And believe me, entomologists look at that. Because, hey, how do you think they get their funding? If they don't have something cool to look at that gets the government willing to pay them a grant or private company for that matter, they're not going to be studying much. So if they can find a cool spider here that could be an issue, an entomologist, they'll jump on that, not just for joy of studying it, because, hey, that's funding. So now black widow is all we have that we have to worry about. Now, honestly, black widows are typically pretty shy. Having said that, I did find one on my pajamas this year. It was a juvenile female, so she probably was not toxic, but I was a little bit shocked to see him sitting on my pajamas in the bathroom as I was getting ready to shower. That was a little bit weird. But anyway, so now getting rid of them, you don't get rid of the spiders in a house by spraying once a year. Typically, when you're doing a spider spray, you really need to do it at least four times a year. Now, that's not quarterly, because what's going to come in and say, January? Nothing's going to come in January. Most of them are done coming in, most Decembers at least, by December, and not going to start coming in again until maybe March, but probably April. But if you spread out those four times through the warmer seasons, you want to do a foundation spray where you go around the foundation of the house, spray especially well up and down and around the windows, not necessarily on the top side, but around the bottom and up and down the sides. Same for your doors, same for your garage, same for any breaks in the house. Depending on the house, if it looks like their wiring is going in and it's not been well sealed, I'll hit those areas a little bit better. You got to pay attention. And then interior, you will get better response if you do an interior spray, because you'll help get rid of the stuff that's already there that you may not notice yet. I don't like doing that every application, because I've never had a place where I do an interior where there's a big problem, because I'm doing it so often, you don't even see a small problem. But an interior, you want to go around the edge, like along the baseboard, and then again, where it connects to the outside, any doors, you may want to do an extra heavy spray there. By heavy, I don't mean more in one spot, but a wider area, and perhaps up the sides. And you want to go around that baseboard area throughout the entire house and then hit anywhere where there are existing cobwebs. I've got something in my basement. I don't see the spiders, but I have cobwebs in spots where I don't really expect them. So I've got kind of an unusual setup here, probably just some vicious spider that'll kill me that I don't know about. But those areas where those cobwebs are, you need to spray them, because you are going to get the spiders there. And I will do that typically once, although there are times when you need to do more. Now, as I said, there aren't any problems. I should correct that. On a modern house that's fairly well sealed, I had one house in Draper, actually, and it was a 1920s house that had actually been moved from its original location. That house was so full of cracks and crevices, I could control the spiders, but the elm seed bugs, I could not fully keep them out. And then I also had another house not far away, again, 1920s, 1930s, and I could not control that problem. The elm seed bugs are very small bugs, and if you have a lot of elm trees around, those are hard to keep out, especially in an older house that is not well sealed. By older house, anything before 1982-ish, I'm in a 1979 house. I do okay, but I see more bugs than is reasonable for what I'd consider a well-sealed house.
I've seen box elder bugs do the same thing. They go nuts, and then they find that little area to get into a place, and you see them on the insides of the windows all the time, then you can't seem to get rid of them.
And again, the newer houses, really, we all talk about how cheap construction is now, and there's some truth to that, because if you go to your gypsum board, the stuff they're selling now is like half the weight of the stuff that was in when my house was built. It's noticeable if you want to put a screw or a nail on the wall. If I go to the old areas in the house where I've got old board, that board will hold on to that screw. and it will not deteriorate the board having that screw in there. The newer board, it'll chew it up, so I have to use the appropriate fasteners. But an old stuff, put a screw in there, no big deal. Unless it's really, really heavy, put a nail on there, no big deal. But the newer stuff is just not as dense, not as firm, but the lightness of it, and it is literally lighter if you ever have a chance to compare them, does bring benefits, including cost. So there's a lot of that truth that the newer stuff isn't as good as the older stuff when it comes to just plain old sturdiness. But my gosh, the way they seal houses now with Tyvek, and that came in the mid-80s is when they started wrapping the houses in Tyvek, and a lot of the stuff that they're using now just simply didn't exist when my house was built. Those things do seal up your house better, and you will have better reaction on keeping pests out. It may be cheaper, but by golly, the bugs won't get in as easily.
That's good. Now, you were talking about spraying the areas. What are you using to spray? What do you recommend folks use?
I use a product. The chemical name is bifenthrin. I do not know what it's sold commercially in your garden center or your big box store or your hardware store. The brand I use is the commercial brand. That's what happens when you do stuff like I do for a living, is you get a big bottle of stuff really cheap because you're buying the commercial grade on the generic brand. The one I use is Bifen, and it'll last me years. You can use permethrin. A lot of the sprays that they're going to market will work. Again, unfortunately, because I'm a pro, I just don't look for this stuff at your local Home Depot in the same way that I used to, like even 10 years ago. I'll go somewhere else. Unless it's like glyphosate, Roundup, most products that I get, I'm going to go somewhere else for. If you're in the region where you can get something from, say, Steve Regan, they're going to have a decent selection of stuff. IFA on their pesticides, on their insecticides, I'm not sure. I've never bought those there, but they probably do okay. Again, bifenthrin or permethrin are the two most common. That's what I use most of the time now. I really am going to have to change that up next year because I need to rotate my sprays. I'm not sure what I'm going to use because I'm so used to using the bifenthrin. And permethrin and bifenthrin are in the same family. So when you mix up your pesticides to cut down on resistance, you really need to go to a different group of pesticides. But I don't even know what I'm going to use because I've gotten kind of in the habit of using what I'm used to. So, but that's a place to start.
Mr. Alex Grover with Utah's Best Gardening, thank you so much for taking time with us. We wish you all the best this Thanksgiving season. Have a great weekend.
When carrying a firearm, always treat it as if it were loaded. Always keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you're ready to fire. Never let your muzzle point at anything you're not willing to destroy. And always be sure of your target, its environment, and any other safety hazards. This announcement's been brought to you by TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Yeah. Don't let your next family outing end in tragedy. Don't drink and ride. Driving an OHV under the influence of alcohol is no different than driving your car under the influence of alcohol. Law enforcement officers will be out checking riders and operators of OHVs. You could end up seeing jail time, loss of driver's license, the same stiff penalties that apply to operating a car. This message is from the Utah Division of Parks and Recreation. Ride responsibly.
Be prepared at home this winter season. Keep an emergency supply kit easily available that includes a battery-powered radio with extra batteries, canned food, and a manual can opener. Keep readily available some flashlights and battery-powered lamps, fuel for generators, and extra wood for the fireplace. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
Put on your helmet, let's go.
But Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities,
yes, bass fishing at Sand Hall State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
For the latest snowmobile grooming reports and current snowmobile conditions throughout the state, check out www.snowut.com. Grooming schedules are posted and conditions and snow depths are updated weekly. There is also a link to the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center so you can get all of your snowmobile information in one spot. This message is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Ricky, my man!
Hey! Headed out on the lake, I see. These fish aren't gonna catch themselves, am I right? Got some brewskis from my broski.
No, thank you, that's illegal.
What? Come on, aren't you the guy that wrestled the buffalo on Antelope Island?
First of all, they're called bison, and I was delivering a breech calf.
Wow, come on, man. I'll trade you this sixer of suds for that life jacket.
A real man always wears his life vest. He never partakes of alcohol while operating a boat. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, not everybody does.
Everybody knows that.
You got me.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
When you look at the number of disasters in the U.S., chances are every area will deal with some kind of emergency in the next decade. And between school, sports, and social lives, chances are you won't be with your kids when it happens. Will they know what to do? Ready.gov/kids has the educational tools and information to make the conversation easy. When the time comes, chances are they'll feel prepared, not scared. So talk with your family today.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Devin Chavez now joins us with Utah State Parks and Recreation. Thank you again for taking a few minutes with us around the campfire.
Always a blast to be here, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Looking towards the southern parts of the state, Cedar City does have some neat things first part of December.
Yes, Frontier Homestead State Park Museum down there always has fantastic Christmas and holiday opportunities this time of year. They have Christmas workshops. They have Christmas auctions. They have Iron Mission Days in November. That's always an extremely popular event. It's always something going on at Frontier Homestead this time of year. That's just a fantastic park just to visit in general. I mean, you don't have to go there to see the light and have that be your only time, or the Christmas market, have that be your only time. Frontier Homestead, having lived in Cedar City for a number of years, I know I visited it a number of times. There's always something fun going on.
Those are very well done. I've visited those in the past. The great destination to plan your season around.
Again, there's so many different state parks in Utah. 46 now, all spread apart, Utah Raptor and Lost Creek. But all these parks are spread around all over the place. No matter where you're at in Utah, that's going to be an amazing opportunity for you this holiday season.
Utah State Parks has a reach into so many different areas, and it's not just the official state parks. I don't think a lot of people understand or fully realize how much influence Utah State Parks has on recreational opportunities, on historical sites throughout the state, outside of these 46 specific destinations.
Yes, we really do try and be a great one-stop shop. The Department of Natural Resources has our hand in a little bit of everything. DNR has wildlife. We have water rights. We have water resources. We have state parks. And we have the Division of Recreation. There's a lot of history that goes into those things. And there's the division's programs like off-highway vehicles and boating safety. That you might run into a park ranger up at Strawberry. Why in the world is a park ranger up here at Strawberry? There's not a state park up here. This is a Forest Service site. Well, Utah State Parks has a hand in it. We assist, we patrol, we help manage statewide programs, not just at these 46 locations, but at a number of different places.
We just talked about Christmas tree permits with the Forest Service last week. In general, I don't believe there's any Christmas tree hunting on any of our state parks that I'm aware of.
You know, Brian, we have to say it because it's happened before. Yeah, fortunately, we don't allow people to come and take a lot of the resources found at state parks, because we want to keep these areas beautiful and natural for everybody. Should anything like that ever come up, we'll do our best to announce it. We get excited when things change and things like that can happen. But yes, please don't remove any trees from state parks. Don't take any rocks, fossils, dinosaur fossils, or things like haunted petrified wood, for example.
I like that story. I remember one of our first interviews with you, we talked about that. I don't think a lot of people may remember that. Let's talk about the haunted petrified wood and why it's haunted.
Halloween may have been over, but the haunted petrified wood lives forever. Parks like Escalante Petrified Forest State Park over there in central Utah. It's become popular with some groups in many years past to take a little piece of petrified wood home with them. And a lot of times these people don't get caught, but they admit to it of their own volition and they mail it back because they claim they took petrified wood, and even though it was cursed, they just wanted to take it home, and XYZ scary things started to happen. Grandma fell and broke her back. They lost their job. Their car broke down. All these things start happening once they take the petrified wood. They mail it back in hopes that they can alleviate the petrified wood curse. And while it is a fun thing to laugh about, maybe the curse is real, maybe it isn't, but it is illegal to remove any of these natural resources from their location. So we ask that, curse or no curse, please don't do it.
That's a good reminder. Not to mention, make sure we don't leave any of our marks behind, too.
Yes, the leave no trace aspect, leave only footprints. Do your best to not only take care of the land as a good steward yourself, but to be an example. Utah, not only the next generation is watching you, but a lot of visitors from out of state or new transplants to Utah are watching you as well. Be the good recreator that you want to see other people see, because they're watching you. They're learning from you. They're not learning from just the things that state parks post on our website or on Facebook or things that the ranger tells them to do. They're looking to the experienced recreator out there. So be a good example.
Represent your sport. Represent your passions.
Yes, be the change you want to see in the world.
Any other opportunities we should be looking towards as far as activities or opportunities throughout the month of November?
Keep your eyes out for more Christmas activities as the time gets close. I know that we don't have a whole lot posted on our website right now, but again, the planning process to make sure that these are safe and accessible to as many people as we can and done smartly with everything going on in the world, they'll be popping up, though.
Again, for more information, if they want to learn about activities, opportunities to sign up for some of these classes, for snowmobiling, for watercraft classes, if they want to learn about the state park passes or purchase one online, where's the trailhead for all this information?
Stateparks.utah.gov for all your recreation needs, questions, comments, and concerns.
Anything else we should be sharing with folks out there?
Have fun. It's not the time of year to stay indoors. Utah, again, Mother Nature played favorites with us. Utah's outdoors are open year-round. As long as you follow the correct safety protocols and do everything the way they're supposed to be done, there's so much beautiful scenery, there's so many beautiful activities, and there's so much fun to be had outside this time of year. Don't let the cold deter you. Plan ahead and make sure your fun doesn't stop.
No reason to become couch potatoes and gain weight over the holiday season. There's so many places to go, especially if you have that annual pass.
Absolutely. Think ahead, book your campsite, get your annual pass going, and continue to have fun. I love when I go out and see people making memories for the first time, or I get to hear about, hey, I took my first hike up XYZ State Park, or I hadn't been here before this time of year, a state park that they visited a bunch of times throughout the summer season, but they're like, hey, I went to Willard Bay for the first time in fall and did the little nature trail they have there, and it was fantastic. Or, wow, I've never seen the leaves change at Wasatch Mountain State Park, and I did the Wow Trail on my mountain bike, and man, it was just such a different experience. Or the Red Rock, away from the heat, cooler time of year down at our southern parks. I mean, it never gets old, Brian. There's so much to do. There's no excuses.
No excuses, and share those memories with others online through social media outlets or just share it with an email or something with your family.
Absolutely, and if you do post it online, tag the state park in it. Tag the main Utah State Parks page on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. We love to see it. We love the feedback. And a lot of times we'll share it as well.
Again, where's the trailhead for more information?
Stateparks.utah.gov.
Devin Chavez with Utah State Parks and Recreation. Thank you for taking time with us today around the campfire.
Always a pleasure, Brian. I'll see you all again next time.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Is your boat registered and insured for the summer season? Most boats must have proof of insurance on board and be properly registered with bow numbers and stickers. Take the Utah Boating or Coast Guard Auxiliary courses, and you just might get a discount on your insurance. For a copy, call 801-538-BOAT. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, RISE helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. RISE Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with RISE Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year. And while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
There's nothing quite like the great outdoors, and at Sportsman's Warehouse, we share your passion for hunting, fishing, and camping. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. And if this winter that includes ice fishing, you're in luck. Sportsman's Warehouse has a terrific selection of all the latest equipment. When it's cold outside, that's the time to come in and see what's hot inside. At Sportsman's Warehouse, Utah born, Utah proud, serving you since 1986, Sportsman's Warehouse, the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors. Waterfowl hunters need to remember to wear their life jackets. We're checking out the camo patterns next on Western Life Radio.
Faster Utah is a nonprofit corporation empowering teachers, administrators, and other school staff to take care of school violence and casualties until the professionals get there. For more information and to find out how you can help, go to fasterutah.org.
Never drink and ride. Alcohol and snowmobiles do not mix. Alcohol slows down your physical and mental reactions, affecting balance, coordination, and most importantly, judgment. It also greatly reduces your risk of hypothermia. Know how prescription drugs affect you before riding. This information is brought to you by Utah State Parks OHV Education.
Be safe this winter driving season. Make sure your car is in proper working condition and is stocked with blankets, warm clothing, booster cables, a fire extinguisher, and tools. Also, be sure to include bottled water, high-calorie snacks, a first aid kit, flashlights and batteries, a shovel, and ice scraper. These winter safety tips are brought to you by FEMA, the Region 8 Youth Preparedness Council, this station, and Western Life Radio.
Stay safe out on the big water by wearing your life jacket. Ty Hunter with Utah State Parks and Recreation meets us on the shoreline.
We need to be making sure of those folks that are utilizing boats to go out and to partake in their waterfowl hunting, that they keep themselves safe. And again, just to say that you can get a life jacket and camouflage or a brown or whatever you need to do. The colors are there. They're not all those bright orange, I call them the Gumby life jackets. They look like Gumby himself, the keyhole or whatever you want to call them, horseshoe. They're not all the bright safety orange jackets. So you can get you some good jackets that are close fitting. You can shoot with them. You can fanny pack. But the life jackets are out there. So just to remember to be able to wear those, especially while they're in transit back and forth. I know plenty of times that you're scooting around and you're only in like ankle deep or knee deep or less water in a lot of places where you're hunting. Make sure you put a jacket on you and take care of you so you can get to and from, especially in those small little John boats. Just take care of yourself and make sure that in those adverse conditions that you may have wind and rain and snow that may be falling on you, that you just a little extra added flotation and a little added extra insulation on you to keep you warm.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.
Less travel, exploring the woodlands, the red rocks.
rocks and streams. He's sharing his campfire from season to season. New places and people with stories and dreams. Through cadence of nature, the wilderness beckons. A song of the mountains rings out through the trees. The voice of the backcountry echoes forever. It carries the message, live wild and free. Wild and free. The song of the mountains is calling to me. Wild and free. In the great western wildlands, discover the backcountry dream.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.